In today's episode, we talk to Tim. Tim has literally been set free from California's prison system, where he spent 42 years as an inmate. Tim was convicted weeks after his 18th birthday. And to hear his story is pretty amazing. You get to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ lived out by men who are in prison with him, and a church that's willing to reach back and pull out some of the people who are essentially forgotten. He spent over 10 years in what they call the SHU, which is basically solitary confinement. So for him to be out and to be so clear-minded and be able to articulate so well what he went through is truly a miracle for somebody who essentially has spent most of his life in a correctional facility being institutionalized. So check out Tim's story. When you were sentenced, how long were you sentenced for initially?
They sentenced me to 7 to life with the other terms running concurrent. Kidnap, robbery, burglary. Running concurrent with the murder sentence, 7 to life. That's the way it was back then, the law.
7 years to life?
7 years to life. 7 calendar years to life.
Now you were in there for
40
years.
Yeah.
So what happened there?
Well, to make a long story short, I was raised since I was 14 in institutions. So I became more and more institutionalized in my head about being a convict.
Okay.
You know, so I wanted to be a convict. I had that purpose in my life growing up through the system as a juvenile. So when I left Youth Authority, I had a pretty good idea about what a convict was in prison, right? And the kind of philosophies they used in their lives, right? So that's what I wanted to be.
So, wow.
Yeah.
So when you got in there, you kind of became a professional convict.
Yeah, I came in the county jail. I met all these guys who had been in prison for 10, 20 years. And they were convicts from like Old Folsom and all those places, San Quentin, right? So I said, wow, yeah. I said, what is it that a convict does? And they said, well, this is what, and they told me what white convicts do, right? So immediately I became, okay, you gotta be white supremacist. You have to run with your kind, and all of the things that go along with being a convict, a successful convict in prison where you're considered good.
So while you were in there being a convict, then you caught some more time while you were in there.
Yeah. I was obligated when you first come to prison in those days to at least make one attempt at trying to escape. Right. So it's like an obligation. You got to at least try. Even though you know if you get out, you're going to go get arrested again in about 5 minutes. Doesn't matter. You're like obligated. It's part of our culture in there. So after I was in Tracy for maybe 2 years or so, I made an attempt to escape from there. That caused me to go to the security housing, to the SHU, to the hole, what they call the hole.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and when I went in there, it's a higher level of convictdom.
Wow.
So I immediately adapted to that, and I ended up spending 7 years in there, straight. From 1977 until 1984, security housing unit, because I had aspired to that higher level of convictdom that the people in the hole have.
Yeah.
It's the way it works.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way it worked for me.
Did it affect you somehow, like you were in that hole?
Yeah.
Or you were just like...
It affected me immensely.
Yeah.
It made me really contempt towards other people of all races, including my own, and I started to build a really angry persona.
Okay.
The person that people knew in there was either, you'd either consider me arrogant or just like maybe a little crazy, but very violent, and it's not worth the effort to, you know, like mess with me.
And how old were you?
I started that kind of attitude when I was probably like 23 or so.
How old were you when you went into prison?
18.
Okay.
I got arrested about 4 weeks after my 18th birthday. November 6, 1974. I've been 18 since October 11th. So that's like 4 weeks.
And for robbery, right?
Well, murder, robbery, kidnap, and burglary.
Okay.
The crime is pretty, you know, vicious. You know, I don't know you guys interested in that sort of thing.
I think just saying whether those crime, burglary, kidnapping, murder.
Yeah, it's particularly.
That tells enough.
Yeah.
Okay, so then after the shoe hole, then you went to prison.
Yeah, went to old Folsom Prison.
Okay.
Which is back in those days was they still had all the Aryan Brotherhood and all those there.
Yeah.
And they were warring with each other, and there was a big war going on at the time. So they were trying to restructure the prison system, right? By locking up all these high-powered gang people and taking people like me who are like superficially a troublemaker, but not that level of a troublemaking, right? Not to that, you know, the Aryan Brotherhood, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So they was wanting to lock them up and get people like me who had been in the hole at that point almost 7 years out. And they came to me when I was in the hole and asked me was I interested in being involved in a program they had developed that was deprogramming people who had been in the hole a long time.
Okay.
There's a decompression program they called it.
Yeah.
And I said, of course, you know, because, you know, I wanted to get out of the hole.
Yeah.
Right? So they sent me to Vacaville in them days. That was 1984 to begin what they call this decompression program.
Okay.
90 days in the hole over there. And if you could meet their little standards of therapeutic kind of reaction with the staff, then they move you into the main line for another 6 years of this group therapy with other lifers and stuff.
And how was that for you?
Oh, awful. I failed miserably. They threw me out.
Why?
Because I wouldn't participate in none of that foolishness.
You say you weren't talking to them?
No, I said, you guys, that's weak. We use all, well, it was weak.
Yeah.
From my point of view, to talk that way to staff members. You know what I mean?
It's talk like what, like your feelings?
And yeah, my feelings, all sensitive, all I wish I didn't do my crime and all these lies.
Okay.
Right, because none of us believe that. All of us were convict criminals. We're all orientated towards crime and the things we do. We don't have any regrets. And to have all these murdering lifers, who I knew for years, act like they was regretting what they were just to try and get out of prison, to me was weak. That's how I was brought up in the culture of a convict, where we would consider them to be like informants for the staff.
Mm.
That kind of behavior shows a weakness where we require strength, you know, in our state, right? So I wouldn't have anything to do with it, and I started to be actively hostile towards a staff member. Then I got threatening. I didn't threaten him specifically, but I threatened him generally. Uh-huh. But if he continued this manner of behavior, that bad things were going to happen. So they threw me out of the program, tried to send me back to prison. You know, they tried to put me on a bus back to regular old folks. But the administrator said, look, you sent him here to rehabilitate him.
Hmm.
Obviously, he's a mess. So rehabilitate. Don't just throw him out when he gets in trouble. What are you doing? How is that decompressing him or any of this?
Yeah,
right? How is this helping when you're there to help this guy who spent 7 years in the hole? Help him. Right? That guy wouldn't. They wouldn't. So they sent me to another program. Right? Now I went over there and I was playing the game there. So by then, I started selling drugs.
In
prison.
What program was it?
It's the category T. It's called it's psychotherapy, group psychotherapy, and that Sigmund Freud stuff, Freudian psychotherapy, right? So I went to that. Now by then I was married with a woman who I'd met while in the hole, and she believed my lies and my garbage, and she became married with me and started moving up to where I was in prison, and I started to abuse her and use her.
So, at what point did you meet Jesus?
Well, in 2007, 2005 is where it began. I started to make a long story short, I started to worship bugs. I started capturing bugs and bringing them into my cell and putting them in little containers, calling them by name, giving them personalities. And my whole cell was full of these bugs, black widows and bugs that they ate. And I'd go out to the yard, capture all these bugs, and go everywhere I'd go capturing bugs. Even when we were in the chow hall, I'd bring bags with me and catch bugs. So I was gone. In 2005, that started where you know, you can't live like that convict thing. I couldn't. And not something snapped. Well, something snapped. I didn't know it. I didn't realize it. But that's what happened. And from 2005 to 2007, I just went down that slope and was completely out of my mind, was doing this bug thing, worshiping bugs, and being just insane, right? But I thought I was great. You know, that's what happens when you're crazy. Now, I didn't know. Now, what happened with the Lord was two guys covered in tattoos, one from the north, Mexican, one from the south. Ordinarily, they want to kill each other. And I saw them out in the day room out there every night for 2 hours studying books together, these two. And to me, that was like ridiculous. What are they doing? Yeah. Right? So I started to get closer to what they were doing. And they were studying Bibles. I said, wow, that's weird. Why would they be interested in the Bible? You know, because at that point, I had no experience whatsoever in that Bible stuff and religions and all that. Nothing. The only religion I knew was how to be a convict or a criminal. That's what my religion was. So I had no experience with this Jesus and this stuff. So one day they had gotten some money and some packages. And they came and they threw some of the stuff under my door. And they threw a little kite talking about the Lord loves me or something. Right? And I said, what's that? You know, so I went out there to ask him, what is this? What is he talking about? Now that's what got me going. That's how the Lord got me in their presence. To ask questions. That's how he works. Now, I didn't know that then, but I started asking questions about religion to them. Each day room I'd have another question, and they'd try to answer. And of course, I couldn't fathom any of that stuff. They tried, though. And there came a point when I was so frustrated with them that I was going to tell them, you know, I don't have nothing to do with you guys, after several months, right? And that particular day, they came out, and they had this Bible, this study Bible. And they said, look, we see your frustration. We see that you're wanting to go about your own life. So here, we want you, if you have any more questions about God or any of that, look in this book and look in the, you know, in the appendix and all that, and it will help you answer these questions. And when they gave me that book, that's when I knew, right? I didn't know anything up until then, but at that point, that's what blew my mind. That's how I knew that God was. I didn't know any of this stuff, but I knew God was. And that they were somehow from him, right? So I wandered around the day room hugging this Bible for 2 hours in this state of just, I don't even know what you call it, like oblivion. I couldn't think, I couldn't focus, but I knew that God was. And that was just, so when they let us back into our cells, I went back to my cell, I put the book on my bed there, and I got in the only prayer position that I've ever seen on my knees like that and started talking. And when I started talking like that, the Lord moved in there to help me understand that what I look like to him, and how dirty I was and how bad I was. But there was a hope in there somewhere for me. So by the time I went through hours of that, where it was just horrible, but there was something there that kept me going. And after hours, I don't know how long, I was just exhausted and I went to sleep. But when I woke up in the morning, I knew where I needed to be. I needed to be with them because they knew what that God was and whatever communication he wanted to give me. So that's what started my relationship with God, his people, right, was that right there. And since then, I haven't left them. I won't leave his people, and I won't leave his word. And since then, that's 10 years ago, that was January 23rd, 2007, that day, when I knew that God was. And since then, I've been learning to be his son and to be a part of his relationship with him, right? And I'm so happy to be with the people who love God, because those are the people who are my connection to him always, because I get to see him through them. And just, you know, so that right there took me from that thing that I was, that murderer and that thing that loved that stuff, and brought me into right thinking over time, right? Away from that and into things that were, that fulfilled what I was really seeking in my own heart, but I didn't even know the kind of man and human that I should be. I thought that being a convict was that way. Right? But it wasn't. But I was seeking that and didn't know it. And God says, I got an answer for you as a man. I'll show you how to be a human and a man and take care of your responsibilities. I'll help you. And through his word, right, I started to learn how to worship him and how to love him and how to be loved, right? And it took me many years. There's so many things that I went through in there, but I wrote hundreds of people. Because by then, the brothers had said, I should try to pray for going home someday, right? Because, you know, up until then, we're talking about 2007. I've been in prison 32 years, right? I was 50.
So you wrote letters.
Yeah, I wrote hundreds and hundreds of letters to all these institutions that claim they're going to help people like me.
Yeah.
And they don't want to have anything to do with 40-year guy. Unless I got thousands of dollars and all that, right? But other than that, they won't respond, or they tell me I have to get out and go there first. You shouldn't put such hope into the prison system to guys like me and then tell me I have to get there first before you'll do anything. It's heartbreaking. So I wrote all these places all over California that claim to be, you know, big, powerful institutions. Hundreds and hundreds, literally. Maybe like 500, 600. I've written all these people.
And what happened when Pastor Mike responded?
Pastor Mac wrote right away. He wrote me a letter saying, this is the outline of our programs, and when you go to board, write me and I'll send you an official piece of paper welcoming you into our program, our homes here, So I went to board in 2010 with this paper, and we talked at length in there about this whole thing, setting up an environment where my parole would be considered. That's 2010. You got to remember my history. I've never done anything at all whatsoever positive. I'd spent almost 10 years in the hole at that point, out of my 32 years, right? And so, and lots of one write-ups and discipline, you know, all of that. So they said, no, you know, we have a foundation, though, of forgiveness. So then I went back again in 2013. Again, they sent the paper. This time, I spent about 7-8 hours in that boardroom with them people. They were really, really, really talking to me.
This is in 2016?
2013. Now, we spent like 7-8 hours in there. They were really, really saying, there's a lot going on here. But after all them 7 hours, they said, we couldn't sign off. We just can't sign off. Too much time, too much water under the bridge here that we can't reconcile. We can't sign off on you. So I left. Then the Lord started changing all the law. Have you heard about these new laws? The one that says, if you were 18 years old when you got arrested, a murderer like me, your culpability is lowered, right? So the board has to hold you to a lower standard of culpability. And I never did pull the trigger on my victim and other things. I was so young. So there was already a lowered culpability. So then they took me back to board. By then it was 2016, right? They took me back to board on a special board. And I was only in there like 30-40 minutes, and they like rubber stamped me, right? And I yeah, sure, yeah, okay, thank you, have a nice day, God bless you. And I left. There's no way I believe that stuff. I went back to my cell, and he said, look what they did, they paroled. He laughed at me. He said, oh boy, they're tricking you. I don't know what you did to them, but they're really working you around. See, he didn't believe it either.
Yeah.
Nobody did, right? Because that's when I had 42 years almost in, right? So we thought they were playing some kind of game. Well, I just let it go, forgot about it. About 3-4 months later, the counselor came, called me out of work, and told me, you need to sign these papers. I said, what am I doing now? What do I do? You know, where am I going? Whole what? You know, he said, no, you go home tomorrow. I said, right? And he said, oh yeah, you know, and it's 2 papers. I said, yeah, sure, okay. Right? And I left. I went and showed him to myself. Look, I'm going home tomorrow. And he said the same thing. Yeah, sure. I don't know what you did. Who hates you? But you, man. So I signed the paper and I just didn't care. I threw it over there and let my celly play with it. Yeah. I just threw it. I didn't care. So the next morning came and I was eating my breakfast, minding my own business like I normally did. And the guards came knocking on the door. You ready? I said, ready for what? Right? You ready to go home now? I said, sure. I got up and walked out of the door. Didn't bring nothing, just told myself, you can have it, bye, right? I thought they were gonna do something to me, put me in the hole or something. So I start walking with them, and step by step by step by step, they're putting me through this process. The next thing I know, I'm in a train, they're gone, and I have this bus, this train ticket, right, to go to Bakersfield, right? I'm in the train, right? It's crazy. I'm sitting in the train chair, holding this ticket, right, like in shock. right? Now I'm starting to realize that this ain't no, this is something way weird. You know, so my mind is like blown. I don't know what kind of, I don't know what to make of it. But I'm there, there I am. And that's when I first started to realize I got to do something now. I got to, right? So I got to this bus, I mean, this train station, the Amtrak. So I'm calling Pastor. I called Pastor. I said, you know, I don't know what to tell you, but they let me out because of what you said. Because of your papers and all that stuff and your prayers of your church and all that. They let me out. I'm over here at the train station. And the parole people had called him to say, can you pick him up and all that. You know, so I'm thinking, yeah, I may end up in the street. Because, you know, I don't, you know what's going to happen. So they came, though. He did, Pastor. And we talked and all that. And they took me to his home. And I was there like a week. And then I said, are you going to really let me stay here? Because I didn't believe it. They were going to let me really stay there. Right? And he said, yeah, you're here now. So I said, wow, that's crazy. Right? So since then, they've been working with that person, that nut, that criminal, part of me has still been laying dormant in there. And there's so many things I've learned about that since I've been in this home, because they work with you every day, all the time, about this stuff, that this baggage, right? And the most important thing I learned is that people can really care for you and love you, right, in spite of you. They really can. Up until this place, there's no way you could have ever convinced me of that.
Yeah.
Right? But with God's Spirit and God's people, these things can happen, these miracles that are unexplainable, right? God's good. He'll take you and be an insane criminal and to make you a right-thinking person of the church, a loving, caring, compassionate person. That's just God there that does that. Right? How good is that? How great is that?
It's awesome. That's amazing, man.
God is amazing. It's hard to keep a hold of myself with this stuff.
You're feeling the love and that.
Well, there's none of this stuff where I come from. In that place, there's no hope for them people. Right? But God.
But God.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's
He'll take the thing that I was and He'll transform it into His image like He's promised. Right? And look what He put me in. He put me in.
It's all God.
I could never have asked. No. I could have never imagined that there would be a place in the world that would take the likes of me. And not only just take me here, but to love me, you know, the way I am.